As the new book, The Gritty Berkshires, makes clear, Massachusetts's westernmost county is not just art museums, music festivals, and beautiful scenery, although it is that too. For generations of working-class families who have lived in the northern part of this county, their reality looks more like Rust Belt America. Maynard Cedar, an activist sociologist who has taught and researched in the area for more than three decades, places the history of the Berkshire region in the context of U.S. and global history through the use of oral histories, union archives, newspaper accounts, and participant observation. The author focuses on 1,000 men who built the nation's longest railroad tunnel, the thousands of men and women who worked in its textile mills and electronics factories and who struck, built worker co-ops and community coalitions to improve their daily lives. The name of the book is The Gritty Berkshires, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Maynard Cedar to the roundtable this morning. How are you, sir? Very nice to have you with us.
I'm good. It's great to be here.
Very nice to have you with us. I'm just going to move the microphone in a little bit. So what brought you to being a sociologist for all these years and a professor? What brought you to want to tell this story?
Well, I got the job at what was then North Adams State College in 1978, and I've always been interested in labor history. My parents are both working class. My dad was a clerk in the post office. My mom was a seamstress. I've worked in factories. And I grew up in the 60s, so I was very interested in civil rights, social justice kinds of issues. And, I mean, it's interesting. I didn't know anything about North Adams when I went up to apply for the job. And driving through Adams, there was a statue of President McKinley. And, I mean, I sort of was struck by that. I mean, Washington, Lincoln, Roosevelt, but I'd never seen a statue of McKinley. And I later found out the reason for the statue of McKinley was because when he was a congressman in Ohio, he pushed a very important tariff bill.
Yeah.
And that tariff bill helped the industrialists of Adams and North Adams. So that got me interested in trying to understand that whole mill history.
And that history goes back to about what time?
Oh, it goes back to the first part of the 19th century, around 1812 or so.
And so just I want to get into it with you, but let's just put it into context of how it compared to some other regions of the state.
Mm-hmm. Well,
in other words, other mill towns throughout New England, I guess.
Well, certainly Lowell, Lawrence, Fall River were all mill towns, and they also benefited from the tariff as well. Actually, I don't know if McKinley ever made a trip out there. But he made three trips to Adams, and he was very much welcomed by the Plunkett family, which was the dominant mill family in Adams. And after McKinley was assassinated in 1901, Adams became the first community in the country to erect a statue in his honor in 1903. So there was that kind of very strong connection between them.
Just the title of the book, The Gritty Berkshires. So what do we take from that of this, the opposite, if you will, of what many of us perceive mm-hmm. the Berkshires to be?
A couple of things. One, I mean, years and years ago, I read a book called Gritty Cities in the 1980s, which was sort of medium-sized cities that were going through deindustrialization. And that word stuck in my mind. And thinking about, you know, I could have called it the Rust Belt Berkshires. I think that would have worked just as well. But gritty, by the definition, doesn't just mean, you know, you get your hands dirty, but it also means resolute. It also means courageous. And that's the way that I saw a lot of the workers over those years in Adams, North Adams, and Williamstown, too. Williamstown has a mill history. And also, I have to say, I think I like the title because for a lot of people, it's an oxymoron. Why are the Berkshires gritty? The Berkshires are something else. They're Williamstown Theater Festival. They're the Boston Symphony. They're dance. They're recitals. They're theater, and so on.
Did those two ever live together amicably?
Did they live together amicably? I think they probably didn't have much overlap.
Yep.
That's my sense of things. I mean, it's interesting. When I first came to North Adams, one of the things that I learned is this sort of, not a wall, but almost a sense of great difference between Williamstown, the Village Beautiful, and North Adams, a much more gritty industrial period, a much more gritty industrial, you know, not just history, but reality there. And I think probably a lot of people in Williamstown didn't know about their own mill history.
When you say about their own mill history, what do you think it's important for them to know, to put where they live into a context?
I think to realize that they were living in a region of the world that really was built in many respects on cotton. And that means knowing what those mills were like in Williamstown, North Pownell, Adams, North Adams, that whole region. And one of the things that we often forget is that cotton came from slavery. And so it's really important to understand that slave connection.
One of the examples, one of the things you write about in the book, and it seems like it's a good example of where we are and the things that have changed, and that's the story of what Massmoka is now and what it was originally.
Right. So Massmoka originally was, well, it went through two iterations. One, first it was Arnold Printworks, and the Arnold brothers from Rhode Island established a number of cotton mills in the area. The last one was really the campus upon which Massmoka is now located. And it was Arnold Printworks. It was the biggest printworks in the world. And they were in those buildings until the early 40s when Sprague took over, and Sprague was doing very well during World War II.
Sprague Electric.
And Sprague becomes the biggest producer of capacitors in the world. So in a sense, those buildings around which Massmoka is owe their history to the cotton trade, and there's a connection to slavery.
Roughly, when were those buildings built, and were all the buildings of the original owner?
There was a fire, I think, in the 1870s, and it was rebuilt around that time by the Arnold brothers. Probably, I think, the 1880s or so. Those original the buildings that are there now.
When you think of then what happened to Sprague, is that similar to what happened to many of the other mills in this region, not to mention across the country?
Very, very similar. What happened with Sprague is, well, I mean, R.C. Sprague was very much interested in building branch plants around the world, which he started doing in the late 1940s, 1950s, and so on. So he was already moving production outside of North Adams. North Adams was one of the only towns that was actually unionized. There was a union in Barre, Vermont also. And by 1976, Sprague basically had lost control of the company, and it was sold to another corporation, and finally it was sold to Penn Central. And Penn Central at that time was basically a holding company. It was basically milking Sprague Electric to try to get as much out of it and then just selling it. It wasn't really interested in putting much more money into it. And I think that was the case for a lot of corporations around that period of time. They found it easier to either close down the mill, move the mill to the south or outside of the United States. So I think that was the history of Sprague Electric. I think it was common in that regard.
When you look at the legacy of these mills and of these projects, and with the Berkshires that we have now, what do you see that legacy to be?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, in some respects, you know, you get the legacy of Massmoka. You know, what is the reuse of those buildings? I live in Philadelphia right now, which also has a lot of abandoned mills, and they've tried to reuse them in various kinds of ways. So it's sort of a reminder of what's been there before, and a question of can they be reused, should they be reused, and what kind of economy will come out of that reuse.
And it is, I guess that will always be a work in progress then.
Right. I mean, one of the things, you know, when Moka came into being, really, I mean, it took a long time. It wasn't until 1999 when it actually opened. But in the mid-80s, it got a grant of $35 million from the legislature that basically supported the business plan that the museum would be an engine of economic development in the area. And there still is some question, is the museum actually going to produce the number of jobs, they said 600, that they talked about when they first developed the business plan back in the 80s with Joe Thompson and Tom Krenz. Mm-hmm. So there still is a question. This is a broad question for the whole country. Can the creative economy, can museums, can they be the engine of economic development that will help those industrialized communities really move in a prosperous kind of direction?
The book is fascinating. It's entitled The Gritty Berkshires. It's by Maynard Cedar and published by White River Press. Maynard, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book, The Gritty Berkshires. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.